Going to move the stand here. Well, we're ready to begin, I hope. Again, we're continuing in our study of the book of Proverbs. The title of today's lesson is Dollar and Cents, S-E-N-S-E, and I think you will understand as you hear the Proverbs read to you, and then we begin to examine some of them for some sense, some wisdom about money and about wealth and about poverty, things which are the bread and butter of life. So let me begin, as is our custom, by reading God's Word. There are a number of verses. This, like last week's topic, there are so many verses in Proverbs dealing with money that I could only quote a portion of them to you, but I tried to quote representative portions so that you would have a sense of what the Proverbs have to say. So let me begin by reading the Word of God. Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops, and then your barns will be filled to overflowing, and your vats will brim over with new wine. Ill-gotten treasures are of no value, but righteousness delivers from death. Lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands bring wealth. The blessing of the Lord brings wealth, and he adds no trouble to it. Wealth is worthless in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. One man gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous man will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. Whoever trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will thrive like a green leaf. A man's riches may ransom his life, but a poor man hears no threat. Misfortune pursues the sinner, but prosperity is the reward of the righteous. A good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children, but a sinner's wealth is stored up for the righteous. A poor man's field may produce abundant food, but injustice sweeps it away. The righteous eat to their heart's content, but the stomach of the wicked goes hungry. All hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. A greedy man brings trouble to his family, but he who hates bribes will live. The name of the Lord is a strong tower, right? The righteous run into it and are safe. The wealth of the rich is their fortified city. They imagine it to be an unscalable wall. A poor man pleads for mercy, but a rich man answers harshly. Wealth brings many friends, but a poor man's friend deserts him. He who is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will reward him for what he has done. It's no good, says the buyer, and then off he goes and boasts about his purchase. He who loves pleasure will become poor. Whoever loves wine and oil will never be rich. Do not wear yourself out to get rich. Have wisdom and show restraint. Cast but a glance at riches, and they're gone. For they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. I think some of us have had that experience with wealth, haven't we? Be sure you know the condition of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds, for riches do not endure forever. He who works his land will have abundant food, but the one who chases fantasies will have his fill of poverty. Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, "Who is the Lord?" Or I may become poor and steal, and so dishonor the name of my God. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy. May God bless the reading of his word as we now begin to examine some of these passages. We're going to be looking today, as I've already mentioned, and as you can clearly see, at what Proverbs has to say about money, wealth, and poverty. Money, wealth, and poverty. Now, just reading through those Proverbs, as I have done, at a surface level, could give you the idea that the Proverbs, in fact, you would have this experience reading throughout the Bible about the subject of wealth and money and things along that line. You could have the idea that there's kind of a mixed view when it comes to money in the Bible, isn't it? Almost like a love-hate relationship going on between the word of God and money, as it were. You read things on one hand that say, the blessing of the Lord brings wealth. He has no trouble to it. That makes wealth sound like a good thing. It's a blessing of the Lord, and he doesn't add trouble to it. Nice. But then you read something like, wealth is worthless in a day of wrath. Or, whoever trusts in his riches will fall. And you think, well, maybe wealth's not such a good thing. What are we missing here? What is the right perspective about wealth and about money? We have varying perspectives in our own culture, do we not? Of course, this has oftentimes been called the culture of greed. We have probably more affluence, and with the technology that we have accumulated over the years, with the money and tools and heritage that we have received in this country, and that are really a great blessing in many ways, we are better off than any peoples have ever been on the face of the planet throughout the history of the world. There's not much debate about that. And there's plenty of greed. I don't watch TV, as many of you know, but I do get, as I'm getting dressed out in the gym, they have a big old TV sitting there, and there was a series of, I forget what the name of it is, Greed in America, or the Greedy, or something like that. And I guess it's a whole show dedicated to going to people who have big, rich houses and money, and showing how greedy and wealthy they are, assuming that they have to be both. So there's sort of a negative connotation in our society about greed. A lot of people feel like, you know, businesses, if they're making money, if they make a profit, it's like a bad word, and they're greedy, and they should be taxed or penalized or something along that line. So we have a lot of mixed feelings about wealth in our society, and I hear a lot of things that go both ways, and perhaps some of us have said things one way or the other. So what is the story here? Well, we hope to unravel this, and we're going to approach Proverbs through four major ideas that we're going to cover today. We're going to begin by giving a few definitions. Always good to know the definitions of what you're talking about. And then we're going to talk about the value of money and wealth. There is value. But then we're going to talk about the danger of money and wealth. There is danger. And then as we transition to the Lord's Supper, we are going to look at the fact that money cannot meet our greatest need. Money obviously meets many of our needs, and all of us are trying to get a little more money. But there's one need in your life, at least, there are probably many, but your greatest need is one that money can't touch. And yet there's an answer, and so we'll look at that. So that's what we're going to cover today, Lord willing. Let's begin with definitions. I'm just going to give a few. Wealth. Probably not rocket science here. Anybody, if I ask a man on the street or look up in a dictionary, we get a definition like, wealth is an abundance of money or material possessions, right? I wanted to think a little deeper about it, just a few points. And this is an observation that I've made. The definition of wealth tends to be somewhat relative. A person who is viewed as wealthy is generally someone who has a lot of money relative to those around them. Did you ever think about that? Yeah, I'm sort of in the personal, I'll just pick on myself here, in a kind of a middle class range money-wise. And so I end up wearing either one of these hats depending on where I camp out. I have moved among people who view me as like some kind of a, you know, just below Bill Gates robber baron type. And they think, you know, like if I take them out to dinner or something like that, they don't even say thank you because they just think, well, shoot, he got so much money. You know, what's with that? I mean, he ought to take me out to dinner every night. The last two, three churches actually that we have participated in prior to coming here, we could have been called Willie and the Poor Boys. There were doctors and lawyers and businessmen, and these guys came with the children all decked out in designer clothes, and we would have small group meetings in homes. And our house is nice enough. I love our house, and people did too there. But you go to their house, and you're like, oh my God, this isn't a house, it's a castle. You know, they got these, you know, everything but the moat and the alligators. You know, I mean, it's insane, you know. The amount of money these people have, and you look at the budget of the churches themselves were just mammoth, you know, works of art in a sense. But so, anyhow, to those people, wasn't particularly wealthy. So it just depends on who you are. And you may be in that situation yourself, perhaps. You go back and forth. Or if you're one of those ones that says, well, no, yeah, Bob, you're wealthy, trust me. And, I'm a poor guy. Well, here's something for you to think about if you're in that category, all of us to think about, really. By the standards of societies in biblical times, and I would add many societies around the world today, particularly third world countries, if you've ever been to one, you would know what I was talking about. All but the poorest Americans would be viewed as very wealthy. I know it's hard for some of us to believe that. You think, I'm poor. I struggle to pay the electric bill every month. Excuse me, you have an electric bill? And what is the electricity used for? What's used to run the appliances in my home? Excuse me, you have a home? Yeah. And, and the water bill. Oh, you have indoor plumbing? You're like, yeah. I mean, isn't that a basic necessity of life? And darn, I need to get some health care. But of course, you can always go to the emergency room and get free health care. Right? We don't think about it, but we have opulence all around us. We have, and not always for good, but we can argue about whether it's good or bad, but we can't argue about the fact that it is a fact that we have a government that sees its responsibility to just pour money into the pockets of people who aren't, for whatever reason, aren't earning it, and taking the money away from people who are earning it to do that. That's a philosophy we've adopted as a nation, as a culture. Again, you can argue about whether it's right or wrong. That's just what happens. Can't argue about that. And because of that, we don't know what true poverty is. We really don't. And many of us feel it at some level. Americans, I think, walk around with a guilt complex. And when somebody sticks out their hand and asks for money, they just feel guilty. They feel like they need to give it. They feel like at some level, even if they're poor, they feel like, well, I need to give them some money because I'm so rich. And you are. You are rich. So I point that out, and then we go to the other end of the spectrum. We look at the definition of poverty. And I want to emphasize that when the Bible speaks of poverty or the poor, as we're going to see in many of the passages we examine today, it is often talking about people who are struggling to put clothes on their back or get enough food to eat. This is the biblical definition of poverty. It's not that you don't have a home, that you don't have a car, that you don't have a TV or two color TVs, or you don't have a black and white TV, or you don't have a computer, you don't have, et cetera, all the things we take for granted. And I'm there too. I mean, if I got put out of my home, I'd feel like I was absolutely destitute. But I'm just want you to understand, when the Bible speaks of the poor, we're talking about people who are having a hard time keeping a set of clothes on their back and food in their mouth. They're hungry. I mean, really hungry. Not like just like you get after, between lunch and supper hungry. I mean, well, I'll give you an example. I went to Haiti on a mission trip one time in the 90s. And there were teenagers down there, like there are here. And what was it we had? Something that somebody had some food. I think it was like a loaf of bread or something like that. Something not spectacular. It wasn't like your mama's best gourmet. It was just like really regular old food. And these teenagers were like hanging out, like, can I have some? It's like, it was almost like if we had a really good pizza and had some teenagers here looking at it. It was that kind of look. And you look at them and their skin was, just kind of hanging on their bones. Those people know what it means to be hungry. We're all pretty plump looking, I mean, some of us try and stay in better shape and so forth. But there's nobody here with skin hanging on the bones. Sandy and I went to an airport recently to pick up. We sometimes volunteer to help with international students. And we had a guy coming from, where was it in Africa? Nigeria. How could I forget? Nigeria. I'd never met the man. But we were standing in the airport waiting to meet a man from Nigeria, and I've let a bunch of people come off a plane. The minute I saw this man, I knew it was him, and she knew it was him. How did we know? Of course, he was black, but there's lots of blacks coming off the plane. He was dressed a little odd. That might have been a clue, but he was skinny, And he's one of the well-off ones. His family's pretty affluent over there. They're hungry. That's what, when you read passages on the poor, you have to understand the context for it. And we see, and look up passages. I'm going to give you a couple. Deuteronomy 10:18. The Lord defends the cause of the fatherless, the widow, and loves the alien. What's he do for them? He gives them food and clothing, because that's what they need. The Apostle Paul says it like this. If we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. This is where Paul drew the poverty line. If you got food and clothing, you're in, you're good. Now, he's not saying you can't have more than that. He's just pointing out that this is the level of contentment. Now, we're not used to thinking this way. I don't think this way. I'll probably never think this way. But I'm just trying to tell you, this. You look through. James, when he talks about, you know, why do you treat the poor? And when you read in the context, what's he talking about? Food and clothes. In Proverbs, it talks about, we don't look at it today, but there's an admonition that if a worker is working for you, or he borrows some money off of you, and he takes something for kind of like a down payment, you know, so you make sure you get your money back, don't keep his coat overnight, because it'll be cold at night. Well, that doesn't happen here, right? We don't worry about somebody being cold at night because we took one coat off their back. We wouldn't even accept the coat. It wouldn't be valuable enough for much money, would it? You can get one of those at the Nearly New for a dollar or something. I don't know. Anyhow, this is the context in which we're dealing. Now, there's another result of poverty often mentioned in the Bible, and that is the inability of the poor to defend themselves either physically or legally. And in that sense, we do kind of experience poverty at certain levels in our society. So there are aspects of being poor that we do experience, and there are principles we can draw from. I just want to kind of set the stage for what poverty really is when we're looking at it in Scripture. And you see that in one like we saw today. It says, speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of those who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and needy. The implication here is in the court system, the poor and the needy weren't able to pay for a good defense, or maybe there was bribery going on with a corrupt judge and they were going up against a rich guy who paid the judge off. Or even if he didn't pay him off directly, he was a guy who was well known in society for having a lot of money. And so the judge was going to tend to wink and rule in his favor. And the poor man sitting there who had nothing to offer was going to get thrown out, and he's going to lose the case. Not because he was wrong. In fact, he might have had the right. The justice might have said he should win, but he'd be thrown out anyways because he couldn't produce the money to entice people. There were defense issues. For example, in the ancient times, the cities had walls around them. We're going to see references to this later. And people who had enough money and could afford it got to live inside the city in the wall, so that if a raiding band came through or an army of some sort, they're less likely to get into the city. There was defenses around the city and so forth, wild animals, what have you. And the people who couldn't afford it, they had to live outside the city and just kind of grab a plot of land somewhere out there. And they got whacked every time something came through. And if you didn't have a lot of money, you could never afford to get the security that a city offered. You suffered for it. In our society, people who don't have much money end up having to live in neighborhoods where they get whacked a lot because of gangs and all the things that go with poor neighborhoods, right? So there's some crossover. There is some application for sure, though it looks a little different. So there we go with the definitions of what we're working from. Let's take a look at the next point, the value of money and wealth. The value of money and wealth. See, I learned that from C.J. Mahaney. You repeat your points. The value of money and wealth. I'll say that three times. Okay, very good. Because the Bible gives many warnings about the dangers of money and wealth, you might be tempted to think that money and wealth are intrinsically bad. I mean, you could get that idea from some of the things said, couldn't you? I kind of have that impression sometimes. And sometimes we have this idea because we misunderstand certain passages or we misquote them. How many of you think there's a passage in the Bible that says that money is the root of all evil? Anybody think that? There is a passage in the Bible, but it doesn't say money is the root of all evil. What does it say? The love of money is the root of all evil, right? That's a very important distinction. We read a story like the rich young ruler who came to Jesus. And he says, you know, I've kept all the commandments from my youth. And Jesus, you know, I forget the question he asked, what's the most important commandment, I think, or something like that. And Jesus has this interaction with him. And it's very clear that this guy thinks that he's earning his own way to God by his own righteousness. So Jesus throws out a standard, there's no way this guy's going to go for it. He says, okay, fine. You've kept all the law. You've done everything. You're doing good. I'm Jesus. All you got to do is give all your money to the poor and come follow me. That's as your Lord, that's what I'm telling you to do. And he's like, whoa, I can't do that. And he walks away, saddened. And people look at that and say, oh, so to be a Christian, you got to give away all your money and follow Jesus. And that you would have a very difficult time demonstrating. That's the point of that passage. I believe the point of that passage, and we won't take time to study it to its full extent today, but the point of that passage is that Jesus was working with the difficulty that guy had in his heart. He was trying to get that man to see he was sinful, and he wasn't the perfect person that he needed to be to get to God. He says, I think he started off a conversation, why do you call me good? There's only one good but God, right? So that was the issue with that man. But there are wealthy Christians talked about in the Bible, and they were not commanded to immediately give away all their money. So you can be a Christian and have money, and it's not a wrong thing, it's not a bad thing. So there's some things that give us wrong ideas, but the Bible has some specifically positive things, in fact, many positive things to say about money and wealth. And we particularly see that in the book of Proverbs, but it's not just in the book of Proverbs. But since that's our book, that's where we'll be looking today. For example, the Bible describes wealth as a blessing from the Lord. We saw that, right? The blessing of the Lord brings wealth, and he adds no trouble to it. So wealth, having a lot of money relative to those around you, is something that is a blessing. It's from God, or can be. It can be a blessing. It can be from God. And you can have it without having any trouble with it. That rarely happens, but it can happen. There's nothing intrinsically wrong with money. In fact, the book of Proverbs describes prosperity as the natural outcome of a righteous life. And it describes the loss of wealth as the natural outcome of a sinful life. Look at what it says here. Misfortune pursues the sinner. And in the context, misfortune here is financial misfortune, because it's contrasted with prosperity, right? Misfortune pursues the sinner, but prosperity is the reward of the righteous. Sinner has financial problems, righteous is prosperous. In fact, it goes on and says, a good man, this is a guy in the righteous category, a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. So he has so much money, and he manages it so well, he's able to hang on to it, he's able to pass it on to his children, and he's able to have it such that the children can pass it on to their children. That's what a good man can do if he manages his money well. And that was a normal expectation. It can be a normal expectation. It doesn't always happen, but it can be. It says, in contrast, but a sinner's wealth is stored up for the righteous. So the sinners get money, but they're not going to have this intergenerational thing going on, because with their unrighteousness and sinful behavior, they may tend to not raise their children right, and their kids are going to squander it. Now, Ecclesiastes talks about this. So, or they may blow it themselves. There was a proverb I read that people who like expensive things and go out and squander their money on it and don't save their money, they're going to end up poor. So their money will end up going back to those who are righteous. This is the general outlook. Then it goes on and says, the righteous eat to their heart's content, but the stomach of the wicked go hungry. Now, we need to be careful here. Remember when we started Proverbs, I told you, Proverbs give general rules. And you have to be careful about absolutizing some of the rules and statements made in Proverbs. You have to. And you have to look at all the Proverbs together to get a balance. So this is what we need to do now. I've made this thing about, the righteous prosper and the sinners get poor. So it's like, oh, okay. Well, that's not the whole story. Look at this. A poor man's field may produce abundant food, but injustice sweeps it away. So here you have a man who's poor. He's working the field, which was a viable way of income, and we're going to see that later. It's considered a good trade. He's producing abundant food. What's the implication? That he's abundant food just doesn't pop out of the ground. I don't know about you. It never happened to us. You have to work. And this guy has worked hard, presumably. He's produced abundant food, but he doesn't get any benefit from it. Why? There was some kind of injustice that swept it away. It doesn't say what the injustice was. We can imagine all kinds of things. But in many countries around the world, it would be a corrupt government that would do it. or it might be some person that stole it, or who knows what kind of injustice, what kind of wrong. So a guy can work hard and still not get. So you can't always look at somebody and say, he doesn't have money, he's unrighteous. He has money, he's right. No, that equation is not the right equation to make. But as a general rule, wealth is a good thing, and generally people who are righteous do things that tend to produce money and tend to enrich them, and that's okay. That's not a bad thing. Proverbs tells us that money and wealth are the normal reward for those who work hard and are diligent, whereas poverty is the usual consequence of laziness or chasing empty dreams. And, you know, we all have seen cases of this. Look at this one here, Proverbs 10:4. Lazy hands. Now, if you chase that Hebrew phrase through the Old Testament and you look in some lexicons and so forth, you get the idea that this is a word that was used of, you know, a bow, like a bow and arrow, and the string is kind of slack. You've seen those. I think I've seen bows like that. It'll probably still shoot an arrow, but not so good. You know, you're not going to hit the target. It's going to go zinging all over the place, and it's not very useful. That's the word. It implies sluggishness, negligence, failure to plan, failure to think ahead, failure to think through, lax behavior, not a sense of urgency about things, right? This is all tied up in the idea of lazy. It's not just, you might have some picture in your head of lazy, a guy, you know, just sitting there taking a nap all day, and that could be included, but it can be much broader. A person who has these kind of qualities, those qualities are going to tend to make a man poor. They just will. Again, there are exceptions, but that's the general direction. But diligent hands, now, diligent conjures up in my mind the idea of hard work, and it can include that idea, but it also means thoughtful, not hasty, thinking things through, thinking ahead, planning, figuring out what's going on, and being creative, being organized, and all those things that make for a person who is productive and helpful to others. And that those kinds of qualities are going to bring that person money, because people are going to pay him to do that stuff. And if you get somebody who's kind of hit and miss, and they're good one day and they're screwy the next day, and people are like, I don't have time for that. You're out of here. So this is what you run into. It says, all hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. Have you met people like this? You know, they're always talking about, I'm gonna get that job, I'm gonna apply for it, I'm gonna do that. And they're always talking about what they're gonna do. Yeah, I'm thinking, I know it, yep, I'm on it. And you check with them a couple years later and still doing the same thing. They're just talking, they're not doing, they're not working, they're not out there making, they're not working their plan, they're not making it happen. This next one's kind of like it. He who works his land will have abundant food. Now, working the land, as I mentioned earlier, this is an agrarian society. This was considered good, solid work in this society. This is productive work. You know, there's some work you can do that it just doesn't pay very much. You know, it's because people don't really want it. You may want it. You may wish people wanted it. But if you're not really helping other people and they don't want what you're doing, it ain't going to pay. And this is talking about, you know, a guy who has a work that's productive, he's going to have abundant food. He's going to have wealth. But the one who chases fantasies will have his fill of poverty. This is a dreamer type person. And now, don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with having dreams. We all have dreams. But if you just are one of these dreamy type people where you're just like always conjuring up dreams about something out there, someday your ship's coming in, and it's just, oh, it's going to be so great, it's going to be so wonderful, but you're not taking concrete steps to make that happen, probably you're going to have, as it says here, your fill of poverty. It's just a natural consequence. Again, there are exceptions. We don't want to paint with too broad a brush here. Be careful of judging people in these areas, but just be aware that this is just common sense. And so wealth is a reward for hard work, and that makes wealth, again, a good thing. However, that's all we're going to say good about wealth at the moment, because there's a lot else said about wealth, the dangers of money and wealth. Though wealth is generally viewed as a blessing in Proverbs, there are many, many dangers that come with wealth. Let's just take a look at a few of them. First of all, Proverbs warns against earning money through dishonest means. So I'm going to start right at the process where you begin acquiring wealth. There are things that are wrong. Money has the ability to corrupt you. Because you desire what money can buy, you will do things you shouldn't do to get it. And Proverbs condemns that. It gives a few examples in some of our things we looked at, talked about ill-gotten treasures. That's money that you got that you, in some way, did something that was wrong or immoral to get that money. And it doesn't specify, but it doesn't have to. That's just a general statement. Contrary to that, the righteousness delivers from death. The implication here is, there's a contrast going on. You get your money by doing the wrong thing, by cheating people, or by deceiving or lying or breaking the law or whatever it is that you do to get your money. And we're going to see some examples. That's fine. You'll get your treasure. You'll have your money. But it won't deliver you from eternal death. Only righteousness will do that. And so you need to be concerned about righteousness in the process. You cannot skip that step. Another proverb, the Lord abhors dishonest scales, but accurate weights are his delight. Now what's going on here? The scales, we don't use these so much in the stores and so forth nowadays, maybe in the meat department or something still, but what the scales were, they were ways of measuring in an exchange whether you were trading a fair amount of one thing for a fair amount of something else. And typically trading went on with either commodities of some sort or just even whatever, things that involve weighing like a certain amount of gold or something like that for in exchange for a cow or some food or grain or what have you, a piece of land and so forth. And what would happen is that people, you know, they'd be weighing up on the scale to make sure there was a fair exchange going on, and somebody could have a crooked scale to where it looked like you were paying them a lot of money and really you weren't paying them enough. You see what I'm saying? So that this is a dishonest means of getting money, and God abhors that. He hates it. And he likes accurate weights. When people are fair and accurate in the way they do their dealings, the Lord loves that. And so there's, again, an admonition to not be corrupted, not let money corrupt you. It says, a greedy man brings trouble to his family, but he who hates bribes will live. Now, what kind of greed was he guilty of? Well, apparently it has something to do with the fact that he accepted bribes. People could pay him off. They'd give him money, and if they gave him enough money, he'd do the wrong thing just to get his bribe. That's a bad way of earning money. It's wrong. This is an interesting one. Some people have said this is just the banter of bargaining. You know, when I first moved to Arkansas, I had never tried to haggle for anything in my entire life. I mean, I grew up in a big city, and everything had price tags on it, and you just paid what the price tag said, or you didn't get it. And I was in a community here where, and it doesn't go on everywhere, but they still do the price tag thing in Little Rock and all that also. But I was in a community where there's a lot of haggling went on. We had to like bargain for stuff, and you throw out a price and they try to get you to come down and all this kind of jazz, and had trouble with that, you know. and this is something that goes on in the process, but I really think it's the condemnation of a kind of dishonesty that takes place in making bargains with people. Let me read it. It's no good, says the buyer, and then off he goes and boasts about his purchase. What's happening here? When he was making the deal with you, he was telling you, you're giving me junk. Your stuff's no good. I'm not going to give you much, but I'll give you a dime for it. And I'll give you, that's nothing. You're giving me nothing here. And then he goes away with his buddies. He goes, man, did I ever rip this guy off? Man, I made a fortune on this. You see, it's dishonest gain. That's wrong. It's dishonest. So that's one thing. Here's something else. Becoming wealthy can give us a false sense of self-importance and cause us to have too high a view of ourselves. And this is what people hate about people who have money, honestly. Now, there's this one, and this doesn't sound like a negative, but just think this through a little bit with me. Wealth brings many friends, but a poor man's friend deserts him. Now, let me just read it this way. Wealth brings many friends, quote unquote. Do you notice that people who have money, people like to hang around them, and they like to hear what they say, and they're respected, and they get, you know, they're just looked at as important. And sometimes it can even be innocent. I was just thinking, because I've been reading these, I was just thinking the other night, Sandy and I went out to dinner in a little Mexican food restaurant. And I'm not being critical here. This is normal and it's fine. But it just struck me. We were on our way out the door of the restaurant, and the hostess was sitting up front waiting for new customers to come in. And she said, you know, something like, "Good night. Thanks for coming here." And she looked real happy with us for being there. And she felt like my friend. You know, she was just glad I came by her restaurant. You know, she doesn't know me. Do you think she really cares? Why is she glad that I came to her restaurant? Because I came and spent money there. And I'm not criticizing her. That's good business practice. If you work in a restaurant, you should do that too. I'm pointing out that people appear to be your friend when you have money. They're interested in you, and they give you all kind of, you know, kudos. Don't take it too serious. And they don't think about it. I don't think that lady was sitting there thinking, you know, now this guy's got money, I've got to be sure and impress him. I think she just taught to do that, and she just did that naturally. She probably meant it at some level, but you get the idea. And you know, if you go on vacation and you've got money and you're paying people, I mean, people, man, they're hopping all over. But if you got no money, you know, and people could tell by looking at you, they're wondering if maybe they need to get you, you know, kind of removed. They're a little worried looking at you there. So that's just the way it works. Money brings us attention that could deceive us into thinking we're some big deal. And so it says, and here's another proverb, "A poor man pleads for mercy, but a rich man answers harshly." Huh? Isn't that, you understand what this is saying? If you're poor, of course, in some ways in our society, this has gotten turned over. Because sometimes the poor in our society have gotten to a point where they're brash and demanding, and I'm kind of stunned by it. I think it has to do with the way the government has doled out so much money. But there's still a sense in which people who don't have anything to bargain with, they got to beg for what they get. They don't have anything to bargain with. Whereas the guy who has got money, he can say, he can tell you what to do, and you can't argue with him, because if you do, you're not going to get the benefits of the flow of money, right? That guy's arrogant. Or could be. That could be a temptation for him to be thinking he's a big shot, think he's a hot shot, right? Our desire, here's another danger, many, many dangers. Our desire to enjoy more and more of the personal benefits of wealth can cause us to become greedy and unwilling to be generous. Another area here. Proverbs says, "Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops." We have an obligation, if we have an abundance of money especially, it says first fruits. Now, this is obviously within the context of a sacrificial system, and these first fruits went to the Levitical priesthood. And so, you know, there's a lot here that is not directly in place today. However, the principle that God owns your money, you're a steward of God's money, and God's money should come off the top. That is money you give to the Lord's work, whether it be to your church, to your preacher, to other areas where the Lord's work is going on that you feel a conviction about supporting. That should come off the top. And you have that obligation. But if you get attached to your wealth, you tend to not want to do that. Then there's this one. "He who is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will reward him for what he has done." So it says when you give money to people who are poor, well, when you give money to a poor person, are they going to be able to pay you back? Maybe, but oftentimes, maybe not, right? And so by helping someone, and now I don't have time to try to develop this, but we've done it in the past. You've got to be careful with this one, because there are other passages. Again, you've got to keep balance at all times. Sometimes one of the worst things you can do is just hand money to a poor person. And I never do that if I can avoid it. Like, you know, panhandlers on the street, I don't, the guy I will work for food, I don't hand those guys a dollar or a 20 or whatever when I go by. There's no context for me to evaluate his situation. There's no way to see if he's being responsible with the money I give him. You know, there's principles of a man who doesn't work shouldn't eat and so forth. And if you just give money to somebody out of hand, and you're not aware of their situation, you could be devastating them. Now, they won't feel devastated. They'll say, "Oh, thank you," and they'll run off. But they'll end up, they could go take it and use it for things they shouldn't use it for. They'll squander it, and they'll become dependent on other people giving to them. There are lots of things that can happen. You have to have wisdom to give money. And I like to make sure when I give money to people that they're being responsible in the way they receive it. If possible, have them work for the money that they receive. I think it's a biblical principle. But nevertheless, this is part of the balance that you've got to have. But the problem is that and I have this problem, I can tell you right now. My vision and my view of what's right in giving is skewed by my own greed. I mean, that's just how I get attached to my stuff. So I got to fight with that too. And we've all got to fight with that. This one astounds me. I mean, and at first it might not astound you, but think about it. One man gives freely, yet gains even more. Another man withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous man will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. Do you see what this is saying? It says a guy who gives his money away, it's just one guy, he's giving money away, he's going to get even more. And then you got this guy, he's got money, but he's hanging on to it because he don't want to lose it, right? He's trying to keep it from, it's kind of like trying to stop a leak. And it says, he comes to poverty. Huh? Wait a minute, he was hanging on to it. How did he end up getting poor? It's a paradox, isn't it? But there's a couple things that may be at work here. One, clearly it's the Lord who's at work. What it's saying is God will bless people who are generous. Because why? Because giving money to the poor, you're loaning to the Lord, and the Lord blesses that. So God makes it happen in weird ways that you wouldn't expect. Now, you have to be careful with that. We have whole religious movements who are like, you know, give to our ministry and you will prosper. It says right here, you know. I would say if you were giving with that kind of expectation, you don't have the attitude that's being implied in this passage. This is somebody who gives because they're just generous and they care about people. And those people just tend to do well. And there is possibly a physical reality involved that people, if they know you're generous, they tend to kind of like you. And they may do things for you that they normally wouldn't do if you're not one of those arrogant, snobby type rich people, but you're one that's generous. So there could be some sort of physical reality that goes on behind it. In fact, the next verse, which I didn't put here because of lack of space and time, talks about a guy who withholds grain and the people hate him. And that's talking about what is a food shortage. And the guy who has food won't sell it because he's trying to make the price go up. And then when it gets high enough, then he'll sell it and make a lot more money. And people hate that about somebody. And so he's not generous. And they're saying that guy will end up being poor in the end because people, well, they'll get him someday. Somehow they'll get him. Because money can do a lot for us, there is a danger of depending too much on money and not ultimately looking to God for our provision and security. This is our song. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run into it and are safe. Now, I talked about cities in the ancient world. And if there was an attack on a city and that they were able to breach the gate, there would be a tower oftentimes in a city where you could run up high and get up in a tower and have a little bit of an advantage militarily or safety-wise or whatever. And so it was a security. This is your place of security where you run when you're in trouble. If we wanted to translate this in the New English Arkansas version, we'd say, the name of the Lord is a good storm shelter. And that would be very relevant to us in these last week or so, right? The name of the Lord is a good storm shelter. And the righteous run into that storm shelter and are protected from disaster. So that's what the righteous do. They view God as their protection. That's what we should do. We want to be righteous. Look at the next statement. The wealth of the rich is their fortified city. Remember I said the city was the place where you got protection? Same idea. The wealth of the rich is their fortified city. They imagine it an unscalable wall. A person who has money thinks this money is all I need to protect me. You know, if somebody comes at me, I'll hire a lawyer, I'll hire a bodyguard, I'll buy a gun, I'll buy a lock, a burglar lock, whatever. And I'm not criticizing necessarily any of those decisions. But the heart can sometimes be caught up in some of these things. And as a wealthy person, you start saying your real dependence, your real security is not in God. It's in that money. And if you don't have it, you feel insecure. It's not all it's cracked up to be. This proverb points that out. A man's riches may ransom his life, but a poor man hears no threat. If you got a lot of money, you can be a target in a society where somebody can kidnap you and say, you can't have him back until you give us $1 million. We all see this in the movies, right? You know, in unmarked bills. Well, a poor man's not going to have that problem. Nobody's going to kidnap a poor man and say, I want $1 million. It'd be like, yeah, whatever. You can have him. In fact, we'll pay you to keep him away. You know, but the rich man, he thinks his money is going to buy him security. And to an extent, it does. I mean, he can buy a ransom. But it makes him a target in the first place. You see, so it's the flip side to this stuff. And it's not all that it's cracked up to be. There's a certain amount of security and money. There's no question. But it can't be all the be-all and end-all. It says, whoever trusts in riches will fall, but the righteous will thrive like a green leaf. So the righteous who look to the Lord as a strong tower, they're going to thrive. The one who's trusting that riches are going to save him, yeah, they may save him for a while, but sooner or later, something's not going to work. You know, the burglar alarm breaks, or the bodyguard's not strong, whatever it is, and he's done for. In fact, money can become such a distraction that it can cause us to forget about God altogether. And that's the fear expressed in chapter 30, verse 8b through 9. It says, it's a prayer to God. It says, give me neither poverty nor riches. I don't want either one. I don't want to be poor. Nobody wants to be lacking food and clothing. But at the same time, he says, I really don't want riches. You know what? Riches are a blessing, but I'd rather not. Give me only my daily bread. No, he knows he didn't say my daily steak or my, you know. And I'm not saying everybody has to do this, but just get the spirit of what's going on here. Give me what I need day to day for food. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Because if you got it all with the money, why do you need God? Or you just get so wrapped up in your mind, you don't even think about it. This happens sometimes. I've seen this from cycles with people who, they become a Christian, they realize they've been living a lifestyle that's not diligent, that's a problem, that they've been lazy, they haven't been working, they've been living off others and so forth. And so they get trained in the gospel, and they go to work, and they start being responsible people. And next thing you know, they land them a really good job, and they get real busy. And next thing you know, they don't have time for church, and they don't have time for the community. They don't have time for all the stuff that prepared them to have it all in the first place. What's wrong with that picture? What's wrong with that picture? You see, the security ended up becoming the money instead of God. It's an easy trap to fall into, and it's subtle. And it's hard to judge it sometimes, but that's just something to be aware of. In the New Testament, we've been looking at Proverbs. Now we're going to move just briefly to the New Testament before we go to the Lord's Supper. And the New Testament, Paul instructs Christians who are wealthy, how they ought to behave, and warns them of the dangers of being wealthy. And you're going to recognize a lot of Paul's warnings because they're just the very ones I just gave you out of Proverbs. In fact, it was interesting. I went through Proverbs and just started trying to look at all the different things that were dangers as I read through them. And I started trying to categorize them, and just I made the categories based on what I was reading in the Proverbs. And when I got all done with my list, I came across this passage in Paul when it came to generosity. It came to mind. I looked it up. And I thought, well, Paul lists all these dangers in his passages, and they correspond almost one for one for all the points that I find reading the Proverbs. Amazing. How about that, huh? The Bible's consistent. Here's what he says. 1 Timothy 6, verses 17 through 19, three verses. It says, command those who are rich in this present world. Okay, so Paul is giving instructions to Timothy about how to manage things in a church, in a local church. And Paul is assuming that there are people in the local church who are rich, who have a lot of money. And notice he doesn't say, command those who are rich to give all their money to the poor and follow Jesus. He doesn't say that. He assumes that they can retain their wealth, and it's okay to be rich and to be a Christian and be in the church and retain your riches. And there would be many people in the church who were very, very poor. And there wasn't a necessity for them to equalize all the money, so they all had the same income, or things that people conjure up from reading the Bible sometimes in a wrong way. He says, command those who are rich in this present world. He does give them commands, though. Number one, not to be arrogant. Remember we saw that? Having money makes you think you're important. So first warning out of the box for Paul, don't be arrogant. Don't think because you got money, you're somebody. Having money doesn't make you nothing. In fact, it puts you in danger. Be aware. So command them not to be arrogant. What's the next thing? Nor put their hope in wealth. What does the wealthy do? What do we see? Their wealth is their strong tower. That's their security. Paul says, don't do that. Don't put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. Remember the proverb about money flies away like an eagle? That's what he's, undoubtedly, that's running through his mind when he writes this. But to put their hope where? In God. Let God be your strong tower, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. What's everything for our enjoyment? Stuff you buy with your money. He's not condemning having everything, having things that you enjoy that you buy with your money. He's not saying, no, you can't have anything. He says, God provides us things. Be thankful. God provides. That's okay. But you have to realize it's from God. It's not from you or because you're rich or you're so smart that you got rich. Then he goes on. He gives them some more commands. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and be generous and willing to share. So they're again, if you think you're real important, you're not going to do good because you think people ought to be doing good for you. Or you're busy out there managing your finances. You're busy out there working your job, and you don't take time to get involved with the people of God, to come to church meetings and do all the things you need to be doing because you're too busy maintaining your empire out there of wealth. He says, no, here's a danger. Do good, be rich in good deeds. Now, you're rich in money, fine. But what you really need to be rich in is good deeds. That's what you need to have a lot of. More important than money. And be generous and willing to share. Remember, we saw the importance of generosity, giving to the church, giving to those who are in need. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of a life that is truly life. Now see here, Paul turns it toward the real deal. Because by doing good deeds, by being generous, by using your wealth in a way that honors God and is right, you're depositing money in that bank account in the sky where it really counts. Because the money that you have here, I don't care how much you accumulate, you know the old saying, you can't take it with you. Or as Job puts it, naked I came from my mother's womb, naked I shall return thither in the King James, right? Can't take it with you. But you can take the bank deposit you put in heaven with your good deeds by the grace of God. You can take that with you. And that's what he said you should focus on. And that becomes the foundation for the coming age, so you may take hold of the life that's truly life. Why do people who have money like their money and want to spend it? Because they want life. They want what life brings. They're enjoying life. They're enjoying the things of life, the food and the places and the travel and whatever melts your butter with money, right? They want life. And he says, yeah. Take hold of life as really life. What's real life? Real life is life with God. That's real life. And we forget that. We forget that so easily. Are we going to have a Lord's Supper or should I? Okay, we are. Didn't see the items there. So we're going to transition to the last point as we transition to the Lord's Supper. And we're going to see what I told you in the beginning, which is that money can't meet our greatest need. Proverbs warns us that wealth will be of no use to us in the day of judgment. Here's what it says. Wealth is worthless in the day of wrath. What's the day of wrath? What's the day of wrath? That's the day when people stand before God and some people are sent to the lake of fire. And if you're a rich man and you were used to in your life when you stood before the judge and the judge made a decision you didn't like, you paid a better lawyer or you paid a bribe and you got out of the deal, that ain't going to happen before this judge. You're before the judge who's not going to care one whit about your wealth, not a bit. It says that righteousness delivers from death. And we're talking about the eternal death of hell. We know that from the New Testament that it's Christ's righteousness that delivers us from the death of eternal torment, ultimately. Now, when Christ saves us, he gives us his spirit, and we produce a personal righteousness that others can see, and that should happen. But if you want to trace it back, why are you saved? Why do you not go to the lake of fire like the rich man who didn't care? Why not? Why should you go to heaven? Why? Why should God let you in? There's only one reason. He says it here. You know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, Jesus was rich in heavenly blessing. Though he was rich, yet for your sakes, he, Jesus, became poor so that through his poverty you might become rich. Jesus was dwelling in all the riches of heaven, which the greatest riches on earth wouldn't hold a candle to even the faintest riches in heaven. Jesus had it all. He gave it up for a season to come down, to take on human flesh, to put up with all of our frailties and all of our weaknesses, and to take a beating and to have wrath, the wrath of God poured out on him. Why? Because we were poor, we needed money, and we had no way to pay the bill. What was our debt? We owed God a debt of righteousness, and all we could give him was sin and more sin, and we could just make it worse. That's all we could do. And so Jesus comes along and said, I'll pay that debt. I'll pay it off. I'll pay it all in full. And I'm going to become poor to do it. It's going to hurt to do it, but I love these people, and I'm going to pay it. And so that's the blessing we have as we celebrate the Lord's Supper. So with that, if you guys would go ahead and bring the table up here, and we'll partake of the elements, and then we'll close. That's not the elements, and I'll pray over each one as we partake of them. Okay, if you would take the bread, this bread represents the body of Jesus Christ, the human flesh that he took on. This is a part of what he went through to become poor so that he could bear our sin. As you eat the bread, think of that. And if you would now take the cup, which represents the blood of Jesus Christ, this is the price that he paid. There was a price to be paid. There was a cost. It wasn't silver and gold. It was blood, his death. And he paid it willingly, joyfully. And that's why we can have hope and salvation in him. If you take the cup, remember that. Father, we thank you that Jesus was willing to give up the riches of heaven. You could have turned every single human being into hell. We couldn't have made a single argument against that. There was nothing we could say. But instead, you've chosen for yourself a people. You have put a new song in our mouth. You've put real treasure in our hearts. And you've given us a new life to live. And it's all because not of anything we've done. There wasn't anything we could do. Even now, there's nothing we can do. It's only through Christ that we have these benefits, and we thank you so much for it and for the memory of it. In his name we pray, amen. All right, y'all are dismissed to go back and enjoy the food.